Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate.
Freedom!
This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli and Tim Maurer.
This is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth. TJ, Tim, not Timmy, Maurer is in the house.
Whatever you want to call me, I am indeed here and looking forward to the show tonight. It's an open show, Drew. Did you know that?
It is an open show. I do know that. And so our listeners are our guests tonight. Yeah. They get to call and ask anything they want.
Indeed.
And that's what we're going to answer questions on. And if they don't, I'm going to have to talk to you.
That would be a disappointing ending to that, wouldn't it?
That would be a little on the difficult side, I should say. But if they call in, 922-668.
There we go.
410-922-668.
I wasn't giving you any help either.
No. I know why. You know, I called in this morning to Sean and Frank.
Oh, and that's a different number.
It's a different number.
Yes.
And so I was kind of jumbling them all together in my head. 410-922-6680.
It's confirmed, ladies and gentlemen.
410-922-6680 is the number. Right, Noah? No. When I call in the morning, I have a special number.
Right. We call a special hotline.
I have a special number, Noah. Anyway.
It's a bat phone.
A Drew's View.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Non-financial. Totally, completely non-financial.
Nothing financial at all.
See, last week we interviewed Turney Duff. Okay?
Yes.
And his book, The Buy Side.
Yes.
And he talks about how he ended up into the decadence of Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
That there are times that, you know, when you make that kind of money, you can get into the party scene, and how it went. He went from all the way up here on the mountain making lots of money with lots of friends and so forth, and all the way down here to the bottom where he's going to rehab centers and so forth and so forth. So one of the things he talks about, and you hear it, you know, hear it often with people who go through rehabilitation, that he found a higher power, his higher power, as he called it. And, you know, when he said that, you know, something in me wanted to say something, but I hesitated and I felt like I wasn't. You know, I mean, hey, he's come a long way and his higher power has helped him get there.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
But the thing that has burned in me all week that when I got back here this week is I have to say that there isn't a higher power that everyone gets to pick and choose. There is only one higher power, and it is the God of Israel. There is no doubt about it. He is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and you can call your higher power anything you want, but if you really want to know him, that is who you're going to meet. And one day, the Jewish people and the Christian people will agree who the Messiah is.
Yeah.
And I believe we're closer to that day than ever in the history of the world. So that was burning inside of me.
Well, and so now it's not anymore.
It's not anymore. And I've said it, and I need to say it because, it, you know,
I'm glad that you unburned yourself of that.
You got this politically correct thing that goes around saying, you know, you're, you know, everybody's right. Everyone, you know, we're not going to disagree with anyone.
That's true. That's
I'm not
true.
Disagreeing with anyone.
I
I'm
know.
Saying that, you know, there are people that could, like Turney, could have a higher power. He just doesn't know that he is the God of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
That's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, if he's really searching for him, that is who he will find. There
well,
is no doubt about it.
Drew, it's popular these days to be spiritual, quote unquote, but it's unpopular to be specific about that.
That
so
is true.
I appreciate you saying that.
Anyway, we're on an open show tonight. 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask any question you'd like, and there's all kinds of things that we could talk about.
Oh, I'd be happy to start with a question. If
well,
like.
Last week we did the senior seminar.
Yes.
Yeah, and we had a great turnout, and the whole thing was just purely educational. It's available on our website, I believe, under education.
Mm-hmm.
It is an hour and a half long, so you really have to have some time.
You know, make some popcorn.
You can scroll through it and find topics. There were like 20 different topics we went through. We talked about, you know, generating income in retirement, turbocharging your income in retirement.
Right.
We talked about Social Security strategies. We talked about Medicare. We talked about Medicaid. We talked about Medigap. We talked about long-term care. We talked about retirement communities and assisted living. And we had Diane Fustine come in, and who's an expert in that area.
True expert.
And talked about it. We went through all kinds of things, Roth conversions, ways to deal with your estate if you have debt and you're worried about the debt you have and so forth. I mean, it was – there was
– it's an hour and a half long, but it's like 2.5 hours of information. I was impressed.
Yeah. We did – what we did is we said, you know, we weren't going to go deep on any one topic. We're going to hit lots of topics because we didn't know which kind of topic any – specific group was coming for.
Sure.
And it turned out that they were all over the board. Some were coming for this, some were coming for this, some were coming for that, and each one wanted more on their topic.
Yeah.
But we hit many people's topics, and now what we might do next time is the ones that were the most popular, we might go deeper into those topics in the future.
Sure.
So, I mean, there's a whole bunch of things we could have talked about. But go ahead, ask your question.
I'll give you another one, because I think it does impact so many different areas of our financial lives these days, be it, and I hear I'm talking about the interest rate situation. It's probably no secret to folks listening tonight that over the course of the past month and a half, 2 months, we've seen a meaningful rise in interest rates, and that impacts the stock markets, it impacts the bond markets, it impacts housing decisions that people make. And I'm curious, what is your take? Have interest rates settled down? Does the Fed have this under control? Do they have any control left to exert?
They never had any control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Fed can say they have all the control they want, but ultimately, if Federal Reserves really had control, Italy and Spain's interest rates wouldn't have skyrocketed like they did. You know, Argentina would drive their interest rate down to 1% like the U.S. to make their economy more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are times that the Federal Reserve can impact people to follow their lead, but they can't absolutely guarantee that when they say, we're doing this, that the market's going to follow.
Sure.
You have to understand that. It's that, yeah, they are a big influence.
Mm-hmm.
There is no doubt about that. But they do not assure that what the Fed wants to do, it's going to happen.
Right, absolutely.
And
so do you believe that interest rates have leveled? Do you believe that they will continue to rise? Or do you believe that they will dip back down after people see unwelcome economic signs?
I think that interest rates will probably be volatile.
Hey,
how's
shocker.
That an answer?
Yeah, yeah.
I think that they'll probably continue heading up for a while because, you know, when a trend begins, it just doesn't stop.
Right.
You know, in other words, the trend is clearly up right now.
Yep.
And, you know, if the U.S. economy is improving like they say it is, because the job report came in better and so forth, then there's nowhere for interest rates to go but up.
Right.
Period.
Yeah.
And
good point.
The logical interest rate for the 10-year Treasury, the logical interest rate based on where inflation is today, which is about 1.5 to 2%, the logical interest rate on the 10-year bond would be 3.5% on the low side, 4% on the high side.
Okay.
So that's where it should be under economics 101.
Right.
In other words, if you're going to give the United States government money for 10 years,
sure,
you expect your return of your money with the return of inflation plus a real rate of return of at least 2% down at these levels. So 1.5 plus 2 is 3.5. That's where you should be. And right now we're still at 2.5. So we probably have a percent to go. Now, if the world slows down again and we go back into a recession, which there are a lot of people arguing could happen, then maybe interest rates will go back down. But right now we're going to hear what's happening with traffic if Noah's awake and Terry Troyer.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Those
fingers in there is again.
Frankie.
Old Blue Eyes, the chairman of the board.
There you go. I like Frank.
I do too.
Yeah. Anyway, we're on an open show, Tim.
Yes, we are, Drew.
And we don't have any callers online, so I get to talk to you. But if somebody wants to save me from talking to Tim... then it's 410-922-6680. 410-922-6680. Now's the time to call in, because the earlier you call in, the more
time you get.
But, you know, it's summertime, Tim.
And, it is summertime, Drew.
People go on vacation. The Beltway's less crowded. There's not congestion out there. I flew to the radio station and pretty much did it in the time you would expect.
Yeah, the time it's supposed to take.
Nobody's on the Beltway.
Right.
And so, you know, a lot of people are out there that have already driven home.
We encourage that.
Yeah, I like that. I have no problem with that. So go ahead and
ask one of the more interesting questions you got from the senior seminar?
That's an interesting question. I'm trying to remember what the questions were. There were so many of them that came flying.
Well, which of those topics do you think is the most misconstrued these days?
Well, I mean, you know, the reason we went through all of them is because there's a lot of them that are misconstrued. Here's one that I thought was unique that nobody really, they asked a few questions about because they had never heard it before.
Okay.
And that is that... you know, people have debt.
Right.
There are a lot of seniors whose debt is rising up. And here's the thing that a lot of people are worried about, is that if my husband dies and he has a bunch of debt, am I going to have to pay it off? Or if my parents die and they have a bunch of debt and they don't have enough money to pay it all off, are we going to have to pay it off? And the answer to that is, to the children, pretty much absolutely no. To the spouse, the answer is maybe if you signed off on that debt.
Sure.
But here's what you do, and this is something that a lot of people don't understand about an estate. There's two – when that word estate is thrown around, there's two concepts to an estate.
Okay.
One is what you would call your total estate.
Mm-hmm.
Your total estate
gross
is
estate, same,
your gross estate, your total estate.
Mm-hmm.
That would be your – money you have in the bank, whether it's in your name or joint name, the money you have in IRAs, whether you have a beneficiary on it or not, the money you have in your house, whether it's in joint name or not, the money you have in a brokerage account, whether it's in joint name or not.
Right.
So it's everything that you have, whether it's in your name only, whether it's going to a beneficiary, or whether it's in a joint account where half of it is yours,
presumably
half of it is yours. And that we'll call the gross estate. So so let's say somebody has a house worth $50,000, an IRA worth $25,000, and a joint checking account worth $25,000 or $50,000.
Yeah, okay.
So we'd take the 50 and we'd say half of that is 25. And we take the IRA, which is 25, and we take the house, which is 50, and we call that 25 because it's joint. So we'd call their gross estate $75,000.
Sure.
Okay? Now, for the sake of probate estate, which is a very important term,
absolutely,
probate estate would be only the assets that are going through my name without a beneficiary and without a joint tenant.
Correct.
Okay? So if I have debt in my name only, then that goes into my probate estate also.
Okay.
All right? So I have $25,000 in credit card debt, and I have all joint assets and all beneficiary designated assets and no assets in my name only. I have no probate estate. Therefore, the only thing in my probate estate is the $25,000 of credit card debt. I really, there's nobody in the, you know, the spouse or the children, as long as the spouse isn't signed off on that debt, on that credit card debt, as long as the children aren't signed off on that credit card debt, the probate estate has no assets to pay it, even though they had assets that passed to other beneficiaries.
Interesting.
And so, you know, you might say, well, is that right? It's not a matter of whether it's right or not. It's a matter of that's how the law works.
Right.
And let me tell you something. These credit card companies don't sit back and say, well, let's think about this. Before we hassle, you know, we, you know, encourage people to use these cards way over and above.
Whether they default
or not is irrelevant. And whether they go bankrupt or not, we could give a darn.
Whether they die or not.
They're not sitting there saying, Tim, you know, is this the right thing to do for these people that were selling these credit cards?
It's possible that they may not be doing
that. They care. What's the law? how far can we push the law, and how many people can we get in here to pay interest on these for as long as we can get it? And, you know, hey, we'll factor it in as to how many people we actuarially believe are going to default. And, you know, and so...
They determine their interest rates based on that actuarial information that certain number of people are going to die, certain number of people are going to default. Absolutely. Yeah,
absolutely. So, you know, myself as a financial advisor, not my job to figure out if it's right or wrong as far as the credit card company. Now, if there were somebody that was treating my client right...
Correct.
I would definitely be on the side with that person that money has been borrowed from.
Correct.
To say, this is right,
yeah,
that we work something out with this client.
Sure.
Credit card companies and some of these other people that lend money, the way they lend money to people, the mortgage companies, I have no pity whatsoever. When a client comes in financial difficulty, and you sit there and say, how the heck did this mortgage company lend this kind of money to these people?
Right.
Student loan debt? I mean, these things drive me crazy because there was no right in what they were thinking about when they did these loans.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
It's the business. It's the business they're in. They're in the business to make money. My job is to work with my clients to protect them as best as possible, even if I use maneuvers that are, you know, just as detrimental to the credit card company or the mortgage company as I believe it might have been to the client themselves when they encourage them in their way to get them into
Absolutely.
That kind of debt.
Absolutely.
So, you know, that's the way I look at it.
Well, Drew, one thing real quickly. I know we've got some callers coming in now, but one thing real quickly I wanted to mention, because you said student loan debt. That is one of the biggest issues going these days with over $1 trillion in student loan debt. And I just wanted to remind people of your rule that you mentioned in our last video, which was you should not be taking on more debt than you can reasonably expect to make in salary in the first year that you graduate from college.
Yeah,
that's
so,
a good rule of thumb.
Yeah, so if you expect to make $50,000 in your first year out of school,
right,
in the career you're going to choose,
right,
your total student debt should never exceed $50,000,
right,
period. I had a gal come, you know, her father called me, $150,000 of debt, living in New York, making $35,000 a year.
Wow.
Impossible
wow.
to pay that off. Kevin in I-95, how are you?
Hey, Drew and Tim, it's Kevin.
We know your voice.
How's that?
We know your voice.
Does sound familiar.
Yeah, I cannot disguise it. So
yes.
Coming clean. But
he's a lawyer. Don't tell anybody.
Okay.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Kevin.
I enjoy the show on the way home, and you were talking about creditors' claims of debt.
Right.
Which
was I right or wrong?
Oh, everything was good. But I wanted to throw in one more point that I see all the time in our office, and people don't realize this, because you had mentioned about the children asking, do they have to pay it?
Right.
And what a lot of people don't realize with the law is that when a person dies and there are creditors, those creditors have 6 months from the date of death to file a claim with the orphans court in writing.
Right.
They are forever barred from trying to collect that money.
So what you're saying, Kevin, is that if 8 months later a creditor says, your parents owed me $10,000, you say, so what?
Go pound sand.
There you go.
Even if there was a probate estate of $2 million, you say, so what?
Exactly.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that more people should understand how creditors' claims work in probate, not only from the standpoint of what I was talking about, but also from the standpoint of what you're talking about. And a great example of that, Kevin, is medical bill claims. You're right?
Absolutely.
Am I not correct?
Those and credit cards are the two most frequent post-death claims, correct.
After 6 months, even.
They trickle in after 6 months, right.
Yeah, you'll see a doctor's bill or whatever come in, and it's like $8,000 or something of that sort. And, you know, they're just slow to the draw and sorry, go pound sand. That's a legal term, isn't it?
Yeah, that's first-year law school. They
yep. Yeah, especially used during the summer with the beach theme. Thank you.
Kevin, we got to run. We got to take some time.
Spend some quality time with Terry Troy.
Thank you, Kevin. Take care. All right, we'll be right back to John in Towson. Right, take it away, Terry.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And this is Drew Tignanelli. And we're back.
We're on summer music.
We're on an open show. 410-922-6680. I'm getting quicker at that, Tim. 410-922-6680. If you want to call and ask a question, only John is on the line. So there are plenty of lines open. We're not as popular as Mr. Social Security himself.
Of course not, Drew. Who is?
Not many people are. John in Towson, how can we help you?
I wanted to offer you a tale. You were talking about the liabilities of a surviving spouse.
Yes, sir.
Pertains to the deceased's debts. There's a cautionary tale that occurred down in Washington. The girl who got the bad end of this wrote a book, and the book is entitled Innocent Spouse. The girl's name is Carol Joint. She was married to a fellow named Howard Joint. And for all appearances, things were really good.
Okay.
They had the fancy houses, including a crib down in Georgetown, the fancy sailboat, the fancy vacations. He owned a bar that was the hottest thing in Georgetown, right there at the corner of Wisconsin and M, a bar named Nathan's. Anybody who used to run Georgetown knows well. And all was great. Then one morning, Howard goes face down in his Cheerios. And lo and behold, all Howard left her was seven pockets full of debt. I mean, millions of dollars worth of debt.
Wow.
So, she doesn't know what the heck to do. She seeks counsel, and they say, well, you're going to have to plead your case on innocent spouse grounds that you were not aware that this guy was basically running a shell game with his finances. The problem there was this girl used to write for the CBS Evening News, and she was a producer for the Larry King Show before she married Howard Joint. So you would think someone like that would be skeptical and inquisitive and be fairly well-informed, but she wasn't.
So what you're saying, John, is that she was actually signing off on all the debt with him.
Actually, she wasn't. And she just took things at face value, and therein lies the cautionary tale.
So all the assets were in his name only, and he was borrowing money on everything that he had.
Copy that.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So he goes off to the happy hunting ground, and she's stuck with the debt, and the creditors come to her and say, don't tell me you didn't know.
Well, but keep in mind that if she had a joint house and didn't sign off on things, and if she had a joint something else, you know, et cetera. But your point is well taken, that any spouse should know what the finances are of the family, whether it's in their name or not in their name. That's it's an excellent, excellent point.
Exactly.
No one should be just, you know, trusting the other spouse that they're doing everything 100% correct.
And I heard a Wall Street Journal stat the other day, young married, 20-something married, only 11%, according to their polling, only 11% of these kids had an in-depth conversation with their intended before they got married about finances.
Good point. John, I have to run. I got a couple other people now
Thanks
that I got
so
to pick
John.
Up, but that's a good point.
Excellent point.
He makes an excellent point. And he, you know, really gave a great case to understand. Stanley, how can we help you?
Hi. I've met you personally, so.
Okay, well, that's great.
Yeah, I noticed. Listen, I was coming home and I caught the tail end of this situation with a medical bill from somebody else due on death.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
So my mother-in-law was in a nursing home.
Okay.
She died in last year, over a year ago.
You're being coached now, aren't you, Stanley?
It's okay, Stanley.
We can handle it. Go ahead, Stanley.
I can't. After 50 years, I can handle it. So we got a bill, and the billing went to my wife.
Okay.
But the billing is calling for, they're telling me I owe them money from a year ago.
Okay.
The question is, do I just pay it or
what
not?
What Kevin said, if it's beyond 6 months of time of death, you tell him to go pound sand.
No, I understand that. But I'm looking at a bill. The bill is, the resident name is in my mother-in-law. The bill is billed to my wife.
What's the bill for?
What?
What's the bill for? For your mother-in-law expenses?
Yes.
Okay. So was your wife, for some reason or another, signed on as an obligor to your mother-in-law while she was in the nursing care place?
No, we just signed the checks.
And then, I will say, though, there is always a theoretical possibility that the medical facility could try to sue your wife for what's called filial support, which is something that Maryland does understand and recognize. But I doubt seriously they'll try it. How much money is it in general? 5, 10, 20, 50?
No, it's not. It's probably $100 or something.
Yeah, well, then I would take the bill and send it back to them and say, My mother passed away, and her estate was closed over 6 months to a year ago. Thank you very much for letting me know.
Yeah.
That's what I would do. I'm serious, Stanley. And if you want, you can call Kevin Bress, who just called in a little while ago to say that. But you don't want to pay him $350 to get a $100 bill resolved. But that's what I would do. Just put it on there. Put a little letter on it. Thanks for letting me know. My mother's estate was closed over a year ago. Thank you very much.
Good. Thank
gonna,
you.
You, go,
see,
Stanley.
You see, they're going to use all these tricks on children to make them feel guilty like it's their bill. Okay? That's why they're doing this. It's logical, and there's a ton of children of deceased parents who pay those kind of bills because they don't want to fight over them, and they feel that it's their obligation anyway. And nothing could be further from the truth. All right?
All right, man. Thank
you.
Thanks, Stanley.
Steve in Sykesville. Real quick, Steve.
Yeah, this might be a question for Kevin, but say you had that $10,000 of credit card debt.
Yep.
And your parents passed away. You know, would it be fraud if you continued to pay their credit card bill for 6 months and then at that point stopped paying and told them to go pound salt in?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't even have to pay it, really. You just, 6 months. Credit card companies can't even get their act together in 6 months, you know?
Yeah, I figured if you don't pay it, then, you know, they might kind of catch on to the fact that they're no longer alive.
Well, they do have to be notified, though. You know, I mean, that is one of the issues that Kevin will make very clear, if he were on the line with us still, is that there are legal processes to let the people know that the person is deceased. Now, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean you have to call them up on the phone and say, hey, I just want to let you know my mother passed away last week or anything like that. There are certain, filing requirements you have to do and so forth. So you'd want to talk to your estate attorney. But, you know, this is a good point, we're talking about. You know, like, let's say one spouse goes into a medical facility and has a lot of medical bills, and there's a whole bunch of bills, but all their assets pass jointly or beneficiary designation. They have no probate estate. That spouse doesn't have to pay the rest of those medical bills.
Yeah.
If there's no probate estate to pay those bills with. But most spouses will pay those medical bills. And in your case, Steve, the key is that you did the proper legal filing that the credit card company needed to know that they had 6 months to make a claim. And I'm not Kevin. You'd have to ask Kevin what that legal requirement is. And I believe just filing in the daily record or something is part of that. All right?
I mean, I'm not in the situation. I just thought of it as a hypothetical.
Yeah,
that's a good question.
That's a good question.
Steve.
The old sleight of hand.
Yes,
I like
indeed.
Steve.
I know
Don't
you
ever
do.
Play poker with him, though.
Yeah.
All right, Steve, good question. We got to go to find out what Tim needs to know. What do we, TJ, Tim.
It's not what I need to know, Drew. It's what you need to know.
We need to know.
You need to know that money has no value. Or, I should say, money has no value other than that we give it. If you've been listening to this show for years, this is likely something you've heard us say before. But it's underscored tonight as we watch the Fed perpetuate its attempts to conjure the U.S. dollar's value to its will. The value of the U.S. dollar, or any other currency for that matter, is limited necessarily by the perceived value another party pins to it, and nothing more. Let me use an analogy. Let's say you're a character in some fantastical action movie in which you're dropped by helicopter into the most remote part of some region inhabited only by a primitive indigenous cannibalistic tribe. You're given only the clothes on your back and a duffel bag filled with cold hard cash, U.S. dollars. Do you think it likely you will buy your way out of becoming tonight's dinner when your captors have absolutely no use for U.S. dollars? Well, let's not envision that any further. But on a personal level, an introspective examination of our view of money would often reveal that we indeed see money as one of life's constants, and we begin to value money in all of its relative impotence above relationship, something that accrues genuine value indefinitely when we invest in it. It may be said that we've fallen ill to a lie that can harm us both personally and financially. Yes, if you manage to follow that never-ending sentence, I am suggesting that those who view money as truly powerless often tend to be its wisest accumulators and finest managers. And that is something you need to know.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Amy?
Yeah, good job.
Pure Prairie League.
Yeah, wow. Like,
hey,
that's really...
But you see, this is country rock.
Southern
you know,
rock.
Marshall
yeah, yeah.
Tucker,
yeah, oh, yeah.
Southern
Allman
Rock,
Brothers.
Allman Brothers, the Nighthawks.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I'm a big fan.
You know the Nighthawks?
I do.
You really do?
I think because you told me about them.
No, you know.
No, but I'm a big fan of Southern rock.
How about
Allman Brothers, one of my all-time favorites. Yeah, how about that?
What was the Dixie Road Ducks?
Dixie Road Ducks. Yeah,
you ever heard of them?
Well, again, from you, but they played your frat party or something like that?
Yeah, with
Dwayne Allman.
With Dwayne Allman, right.
I mean, that's
Greg
legendary
Allman,
stuff.
Greg Allman.
Oh, Greg. Dwayne
Greg
was dead by then.
I don't know. I don't
yeah,
know
yeah,
where
he was. He was.
He didn't smell bad, so I would assume it wasn't them. That it wasn't Dwayne. Anyway.
Probably.
We're going to go to Jim in Parkville. Jim in Parkville, how can we help you?
Yes, good evening, Drew and Tim.
Good evening, Jim.
Pleasure to speak with you. Listen, I wonder if maybe I can tap your brain a little bit and ask you, sort of in general terms, what you may know about what's known as the Adult Waiver Program.
Well, it's sort of the, you know, you basically would call that the assisted living program. Okay, so instead of paying for a full Medicaid long-term care facility, you would pay, the Medicaid would step in and just provide for an adult, you know, for more of assisted living, a lot cheaper, less costly. Now, you would think that that's logical. The problem with the adult waiver program is that it's like a 92-year wait. I mean, if Kevin were still on the line, this is something that he does
right,
a lot
right.
with.
Well, here's let me just have you pause for a second. I applied.
That's hard for me sometimes.
Yeah, it is.
Go ahead.
On behalf of my wife, and we just now have received the application to fill out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so she's in line now.
Right.
Now, with regard to the application, okay, the application itself is highly invasive, if you will. I had to, you know, I sort of have to bend over to fill it out, if you know what I mean.
Right. Now I understand.
We get the idea.
It's worse than that, but go ahead.
So I'm just wondering what the pitfalls are, you know. I mean,
you're never going to get it. So, you know, maybe five or six years from now you might get it.
Is that right? So the...
And I would also...
The approval, even after the application, the approval could take as long as that.
The adult waiver program is pretty much a very limited program that there's such a long waiting list on it that you're unlikely to get benefits from it. But here's what I would suggest to you, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime dealing with Medicaid, unless you're a trained expert in it, I wouldn't attempt it by myself. I would contact a guy like Kevin Bress and work with him.
Kevin who?
Kevin Bress, who called in earlier on the show.
Oh, I didn't
okay.
Hear him.
Well, Kevin Bress is with the firm of Pessin and Katz.
Okay.
You probably have heard it as Hodes, yep. Pessin and Katz or something like
that.
Well,
I know Mr. Hodes.
Yeah. Well, he's in a new firm now, but I would not – he's too expensive in my opinion. I like Michael. He's a good guy in some ways, but he's too expensive.
Okay.
You want to work with a guy like Kevin.
Okay. Kevin's last name is spelled how?
Bress, B-R-E-S-S. And actually, I know his phone number right off the top of my head.
Impressive.
It's 410.
Right.
339.
Right.
6767.
No, that's impressive, isn't it?
Okay.
I mean, he might just be making it up. But
I think he's making it up.
I think
no,
so.
No, I'm pretty sure. I could pull out my cell phone right now and see if his thing comes in. Here, we'll do that. You know,
Why not, Drew?
It on the air
let's see
if it's. Let's see if Drew's memory. Hey, wait a minute. No, we're doing something on our
own.
This
is very productive.
410-339-6767. All right. Oh, look at that. See what it says?
Got it.
Kevin
right.
Bress.
Kevin Bress.
There it goes. It
B-R-E-S?
Even... B-R-E-S-S.
B-R-E-S-S.
No, B as in boy.
Right.
Roger, Eddie, Sam, Sam. B-R-E-S-S.
Okay, gotcha.
Bress. And it came up on my cell phone when I dialed that. I didn't have to go to his voicemail. But it came up on my cell phone as Kevin Bress when I dialed that
I think that
number.
Would have been more fun if we just put it on speaker and everybody got a chance to hear
it. I thought it would have been pretty cool, but,
yeah.
You know, hey, I proved it already.
There would have been more drama there, Drew.
There would have been more drama. But
listen, Drew, this should not be attempted by a novice.
No way. No way. Because, look, Medicaid is not going to help you in any way. It's not like going to the probate court. You go to the probate court, probate people are going to help you, work it out, get it done right. Medicaid people are not going to help you. They'll actually tell you information specifically to make sure that you never get approved.
Really?
And unless you have a lawyer who has the training and education as to how to get through the process, and Kevin will explain to you all about the adult waiver program, and if I'm right, and you can call me back and let me know after you talk to Kevin,
right.
You're going to find the adult waiver program as a dead end.
Okay,
now, let me ask you a question. Were you ever in the military?
I was not, no.
Okay. Well, you know, that's always something you want to check. If somebody's been in the military.
No, of course, of course.
There are some things that either you or your spouse can get that most people don't think about. But if you have this situation going on, Jim, you know, $4,000 or $5,000 for a lawyer like Kevin, man, I'll tell you, it'll be some of the best money you ever spend in your entire life.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
All right.
Well, that's invaluable advice, and I will certainly give Mr. Bress a call, at least touch base with him and see what he can what he can educate me to.
Yeah, I think they charge like $500 for an initial couple-hour interview and find out what your situation is and explain to you more in detail what they can do. Okay?
I clearly understand. You guys are invaluable.
No, thanks.
Thank
we
you,
appreciate that.
Absolutely fabulous.
All right, well, you take care, my friend.
Thank you so much. All right.
All right, you take care.
We have the most knowledgeable callers
next week.
On any radio show in history.
Next week is going to be interesting. Ning Wang. Who doesn't speak English very well.
Not particularly well. It's going to be a fascinating show.
He's going to talk about how China became capitalistic. It's going to be interesting.
Interesting topic for
anyway, this is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.